Open your Bibles to Acts 16. Get some get some scriptures. Eli is going to read Acts 16:13-15. Devin, Acts 16:13, and one more. Lem is going to read Acts 16:13 the second time. This past week, we sent out two couples to Pioneer, and either just before they left, and then now that they both have arrived, I've been answering some basic questions, basic pioneering questions, and so that triggered me. I thought that would be information that you would like to know if you have the possibility that God may want you to pioneer someday. So we're going to look at practical pioneering beginnings, very basic but necessary. Acts 16:13-15, the reason why we're reading this is Paul and the brothers, that they are going to a new city. And we see a few things that they do. Acts 16:13-15.
And on the Sabbath day we went out of the city to the riverside, where prayer was customarily made, and we sat down and spoke to the women whom we met there. Now a certain woman named Lydia heard us. She was a seller of purple from the city of Thyatira, who worshipped God. The Lord opened her heart to heed the things spoken by Paul, and when she and her household were baptized, she begged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay." So she persuaded us.
Okay. Practical pioneering beginnings here. So let's look at these. Let's go through a number of very, very practical issues. And in some of these, we're going to differentiate between whether you go to a large city or whether you go to a small town, because some of these factors may be a little bit different, but I'll point them out as we go. Number one, first practical issue has to do with housing. Housing, finding a place to live. And so, now here's a difference. If you went to a large city, where you actually choose to live is going to be important. Very simple and practical issue is you don't want to find a house that is a long way away from where you're going to have church. And give you in the files of my experience in Johannesburg, we had a guy who came and was going to locate in one area. He found a house that he liked because mama liked it. And during the day when he found it, it was 45 minutes away from where he was going to pioneer the church. The problem is he didn't take into account, 45 is already stupid, but the problem is he didn't take into account traffic. It actually took, in the morning trying to get there for prayer and at night trying to get there for church, it took an hour and a half one way to get there. So, consequently, what happened? He didn't pray. So we already got a problem. And then signed a, you know, monster lease. I don't remember how long the lease was. So some huge amount. All right. So he's already started with stupidity. He's already shot himself in the foot, and he hasn't even reached a single person yet. Because, and let me just say overall, if you want to go into the ministry, if you have to have everything super nice. Or if your wife is a fussy prima donna and will only live in a certain level or certain class, I suggest you sell insurance. You should do something else. You shouldn't pastor. Because the whole point is that at various points when you begin, you sacrifice and you do whatever it takes. You put the ministry first. So, location. You don't do that. Obviously in a small town, where it only takes 10 minutes to get from end to end, the above wouldn't apply. But I see that. There are things that, you know, the wife, I always wanted to have a cabin in the woods, and so they get a, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. And so then for follow-up, you know, come over for dinner, and people are like, what? Why would I want to go out in the middle of the, you know. So, where you live, that's a common one. Second issue of housing is how much to pay for that housing. This is a common question. The answer is determined very simple, and that is that we give, every guy who goes, obviously we give them an amount of money that will cover first and last, and get them into the house. And then we have some guys that their agreement is, before they go, you will get a job as soon as you get there. You're going to look for a job, start working. There are other guys that we say, we'll give you 3 months to start getting some people, and then we can assess. So not everybody goes with the exact amount. But everybody is going to have a limited amount of time that we're going to help them pay the rent. And so the idea being is that at some point, you have to pay your own rent. So if you get yourself a mansion, and we're paying for it for X number of months, 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, that's great. Then what? So now you're in trouble. So that means, number one, you have to work, you have to find a certain level job now, or you have to work longer hours, right? Because the idea in pastoring is that at some point you want to build your church up so that they can pay your rent and you not have to work, you can be full-time. And so the difference is, in a small pioneer church, a guy, he's looking at two different ones, and the difference between them is $300. Well, when you are talking about in a pioneer church, $300 is a lot of money when you have brand new people or only a handful of people. And so, very simple, that's you would be wise to take the lower range of housing, because that will pay off in the long run. Second issue, practical and pioneering, is where do you locate your church? So, a few factors. Number one is that, and this is assuming you're going to a larger city, if you're going to a larger city where there already are pastors, you have to consider the other pastors in the city. And that is and that's a simple factor. It would be foolish of you to locate your church close to another guy's church and you tick off the other guy who's already there, because you're going to need impact teams from him. You're going to need help, so you don't want to arrive in a city and start fighting with somebody. Right? Does that make common sense? And so, very simple. When Brandon first, you know, felt God speak to him about Aurora, he asked some guys and they said, no, there's no church there. Well, there was a church there. They had just moved a little bit beyond. And so, a very simple step. We actually now have a simple website, cfmmaps.org, and so I pulled it up and said, yep, there is a church in Aurora, but this is where it's located. It's over here on the edge. And so I said, so number one, when you get there, I want you to be far away from him. Where's the next church? The next church, there's one way over here, there's one. So I said, in this area, you can locate anywhere in here. We have, in big cities like Phoenix, where they have tons of churches, or in a large city, the technical rule is you cannot get a building closer than 2 miles away from the next church. But that's in a city where we have like 60 churches or something in Phoenix. If you're going in where there's three guys, you would be foolish to locate your church right up close to him. I mean, personally, logic says I would want to be, right? That's like going fishing and pulling your boat up right where the other guy is, right? Hey, give yourself some space to fish. So it's very, very, you use your head. So that's something that is wise. And then something that that came up is one of the guys said that his father-in-law, I think, pastors in the same city, and then he said his father-in-law claims some areas where they outreach. And that gets you into, you know, technically, you know, you can't locate in one area, but I claim the whole city as outreach fishing spots for the King of Spain. You can't do that, you know. So, but, again, those things are often easily avoidable, so ask questions. It's very simple, because you don't want to get distracted by getting in a fight. I've seen guys at the moment they arrive, they're in a conflict, and for the entire time they're there, they're in a fight with all the guys in the same city. And that seems completely insensible to me. The other thing about where to locate your church is identifying. Now, in a large city, you need to identify. Really, you need to kind of drive around the lot and get an idea of the city. That's that's wisdom. In a large city, you have areas that you'll go for X number of blocks, and it'll all be nice housing and beautiful people, and you'll cross the street, and it's the hood. And that's the way it is in big cities. And you need to find out. If you're witnessing to somebody and they say, "Where's your church?" and you tell them and their eyes get big and they say, "There is no way I'd ever go there," you just made a mistake, didn't you? And so that takes you some time to find out. So one of the things that you do that we see in our scripture is you identify where do people gather. Right? I mean, you could find a building out in the middle of the woods, theoretically, but that's not where people gather. So look at Acts 16:13, first time.
"And on the Sabbath day we went out of the city to the riverside where prayer was customarily made, and we sat down and spoke to the women who met there."
Okay, so they've just arrived in town. What are they doing? Let's go find where people gather. Where do people gather in this town? That may be shopping, that may be sports, that may be parks, beaches, rivers. There can be dozens of different reasons. And so if you are identifying where people gather, you are identifying, one, an evangelism spot. We could have an outreach there. Two, you're identifying where people are likely to be willing to gather, right? There are areas. A gated community would not be a good place to locate a church, because people who live in gated communities, this is my little castle, I go in there, I don't talk to anybody, I don't come out of my house, right? And there are areas. And then there may also be areas that are just so dangerous that they don't go out for various reasons. Any of you, if you've lived all your life in Prescott, Arizona, you are a little bit handicapped in that regard, because the whole world doesn't look like Prescott, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And so you got to find out. So you drive, you look, you ask questions, you do it. And one of the important issues is you go at different times, because as the people, things look very different between night and day. In most of your large cities in America, if you go downtown Monday through Friday, it will look like this is a fantastic place for a church. You'll see hustle and bustle. Look Saturday and Sunday, it'll look like a ghost town. Right? It's totally different. Danger is another factor, is that an area can look okay, but then you see the creatures of the night that come out. And it becomes very dangerous. And so if you're telling Mr. Clean Cut, you know, Dad, you bring your family and your five kids out to our hood where they have drive-bys every day, he's unlikely to do that unless he himself is a gangster. Then he'll have no problem. Right? So you got to look. That's an important issue. Asking questions is a very important part of that. So a simple thing you should do is everywhere you go, you should be asking local people their opinions. Hey, what kind of area is this? Do you live near here? What kind of people live here? and because people are not shy about their opinions. No way. Nobody lives here but hookers and crackheads. Well, that's probably not the corner you want to locate your building in. Right? This is more murders per square inch than anywhere in the world. And so that's important to ask. And one of the things you gotta find is that not all information you get from everybody is accurate, but you would be wise to ask, so at least you have a file to pray about or to call me and ask my opinion. The other thing is you ask local pastors and ask their opinions. However, I put a large asterisk here, is you ask pastors, considering though, it is very likely if someone is struggling that what they tell you is going to be wildly inaccurate. Okay? And so, personal experience, when I went to South Africa, you got to imagine, because things are divided where you locate a church, you actually had to choose a race because they were so divided, and that now it's they've moved and migrated. So between the four major people groups, whites, blacks or Africans, that's what they call them, coloreds, which is mixed race or mulatto, or Indians, those were your four major, you literally had to pick a race. Who am I going to concentrate on? And so I arrive, I've never been here before, and I start talking. We had, I think, there was either 8 or 11 missionaries. Every single one of those guys told me something wildly different than the other guy. One guy would say, white people are from hell. Absolutely not. No. You need to go for Indians. Indians? Oh, my God. You're kidding. Indians, they're the most disgusting. Yeah, those people are lying, rip off. No, you got to go for colored. Colored? There's no way. They're a bunch of drunks. And they'll kill you. They're religious. You know, blacks? Absolutely not. And they all... So I listened to all of them, and I didn't take any of their advice. Because what had happened is they had all had a bad experience with someone from that race, and they formed an entire doctrine about it. A white guy ripped them off, so therefore all the whites are from hell, right? A religious guy, a religious colored guy did this, so therefore all colored people. And that fortunately I had been pastoring, I had enough experience to kind of weave through, that's true, that's not true. And then part of that is people who are struggling, unbelief is evangelistic, right? You need to remember that. Everybody evangelizes for something, but unbelief is incredibly evangelistic, and they will warn you. If Lisa and I had listened to anybody, there's no way we would have wound up in El Dorado Park, because we had so many people, pastors and pastors' wives included, tell us that they're just waiting there to kill you, to rape your wife and kids, and blah, 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 blah. So I didn't listen to them, and thank God, and God built a work. But there are things to learn, and so you got to ask questions. The third thing is you got to find a place to meet, right? So housing, where to locate your church, find a place to meet. You have to, and I did a whole lesson on this, but you have to get going. The moment you arrive, I expect you to get going reaching people. It drives me crazy. I see guys that they land in a city and they don't even start doing any outreach or doing anything for 3 months, for 6 months. If any of you were to do that, you would already be back. I'd bring you back if there was no... Your job is to get going. So, very simple, is that you need to have a place to bring them or a place to draw them to, which obviously is you can begin with your house. So the obvious is that you would start having people over for dinner, Bible studies, and depending on your housing situation, you may even be able to do an outreach, just using your house as the focal point. And for some people, that becomes the factor in the housing that they choose. We have had some guys go in the past, and the housing in the apartment complexes, they had a large common area with, in some places call them cabanas, and some of them basically it's meeting rooms. That by the fact that you live there, you had the right to use the meeting room. The common, there were guys that was advantageous, and they started their church in the cabana or the meeting room. So that's something to consider. You need, secondly, a place to have church. Now, in a small town, it's not so crucial to experiment. I talked with Gary Basham yesterday. He's in Tucumcari, New Mexico, one main street. So it's not like he needs to outreach in all kinds of different areas. It's not like he needs to make sure that building location is going to be good because, you could wind up in a small town. It's very easy. If you got one main street, anywhere you put the building on the main street would probably be okay, right? So it's not as crucial. So my advice to Gary is different than my advice to Brandon because they're not in the same situation. And that's simply a size of a city. And so in Gary's case, he immediately found a building, and I'm willing for him to get a building immediately. Brandon, I won't even consider it because he's in a city of almost 2 million people, and therefore you could locate in an area. What happens is that you get guys that they locate in one area and they hurried and it looked good during the day or at the time, and then they realize 3 months later, this area really sucks and there's no way I should have ever been here, but I've signed a 2-year lease. That was a mistake. So in a larger city, it's possible that you could go to numbers of different areas. And some may not be so good. So in a larger city, your strategy is you're not to look for buildings immediately. I don't want to talk to you about, hey, I found a building we can rent. Don't want to know about it because you don't even know the city yet. That'll take some time. And we're not going to lock ourselves into a lease, put money into fixing up a building, only for you to discover that you change your mind. In larger cities, your strategy is to go fishing. Witness personally in a number of different areas, in a number of different economic levels, to gauge response. And that becomes, in a larger city, very, very simple. Robert Polacco in his head was spinning with how many possibilities you can, in a city of up to 10 million people, you can go anywhere. His head was hurting. He's like, I don't know. And I said, how about this area? We'll do an outreach for you Saturday. And he's like, well, we don't have flyers. I said, Robert, in South Africa, I said, you don't need flyers. Don't worry about it. We showed up, made noise. I had a guy who tried to sing. He was like a strangled cat. They got nothing to do there, and we drew 400 people.
Wow.
No advertising. 400 people. Robert, preaches. I don't know. Definitely 150 raised their hands. And then when they finished, I took the microphone. And I said, "This is my friend from America. He's thinking of coming here and starting a church. How many of you would come to this church if he was here?" And they all raised their hand. And Robert said, "I think God just spoke." So, right? So, and they're there today. They're there today. Chris Olson took that church later on. And so that's a matter of fishing, right? So that's an experiment. God does guide by circumstances sometimes. And that would be a wise way in a multiple option city, go fishing, witnessing. I witnessed in this area and no one was even open. But when I witnessed in this area, two people got saved and they said, man, we'd love to come to your church. Right? Well, that's God helping you by circumstances. As Eleazar said, I being in the way, the Lord led me. So that doesn't, in a small town, you wouldn't need to do that because you're there. And it doesn't matter whether the response is, you need to be there anyway. You could, in some cases, try some outdoor outreaches. That's if the weather permits. I think it was, wasn't it Maldonado that they arrived on Pack Friday, and Sunday they saw a concert in the park and went and joined it and showed a movie and passed out some cheesy flyers that they quickly photocopied and had a bunch of people say. That was weather permitting, you know. The Kleins and Pepiches, it's freezing cold, so outdoor outreach is probably not so good at the moment. So they're limited in that way. But if you can, you can do some impromptu. You don't have to do a big production with impact teams, but just try it. And then if you are in a big city and you're trying to make up your mind, you could try some outreaches in different buildings. In other words, print up, you know, a few hundred flyers, try it in this recreation hall, try it in that hotel ballroom on succeeding weekends or however you want to work it out. And I got a great response there, lousy response there, so that tells me this area would be better. It's like fishing. Any of you that fish, where do you fish? Where the fish are. And so one of the things you're looking for when you drive around is you're looking for halls open where you can rent, not permanent, but where can you rent for a night? In other words, recreation centers, community halls, banquet rooms in hotels, those are obvious ones. And you just got to find out what's available in your area. Final thing in being practical is you have to remember, what am I here for? You're actually not there for sightseeing. You're actually not there to have your house be the finest place in all the world. You're there to do kingdom business. And I think it's crucial. Momentum is a crucial factor. If you will hit the ground running, God often will honor that. And if you wait, I see guys that wait 3 months before they ever start doing something for God. That's a huge mistake. And they have lost out. There's a reason why we announce them, and typically for us, within 2 weeks, they're out of here. Because they're still excited from conference. They still got the conference buzz. Still got the Holy Ghost with them. Residual. And so that's when I want them to go. I don't want them to, after they've already gone flat, now to start. So, Acts 16:13, the second time, Lem.
And on the Sabbath day we went out of the city to the riverside, where prayer was customarily made, and we sat down and spoke to the women who met there.
Okay, so they were not messing around. They arrived, and they went immediately and got down to business. Okay, and the business was more than just finding a place to sleep. It was bigger than that. You got to find, obviously, housing is a priority, but you got to get on with business. I like the story of Mark Olson tells when he went to Davao City that the taxi driver who took them from the airport to the hotel, they witnessed to him and he got saved and is in the church today. And that's there's no messing around, right? When Lisa and I pioneered in Launceston the first time, every contact I made, I had to go open a bank account. I'm telling the guy why I'm there. I'm witnessing to him. Real estate agents looking for houses, this is why we're here. We're witnessing to him. Basically, every person, if they would talk to me for a couple of minutes, I'd invite them over for dinner. Because that's our business. We had, before our, in Australia back then, the distance, they didn't have U-Hauls. You couldn't drive your own goods 3,000 miles, plus it was across water. So our goods had to be shipped. I had Bible study in somebody else's house before we ever got our furniture. Right? Tuesday we arrived. Thursday I had Bible study. We didn't have furniture yet. We're in a hotel, but I had met some people. They were willing to have a Bible study, so we didn't mess around. And then when our goods arrived, we finally got our house together. We unpacked, put it together. If I remember right, it was on a Monday. Tuesday, we had Bible study in our house. So my point is we didn't mess around. We were there to do kingdom business. And those are some practical things that will help you. Okay, let me open for some questions that may trigger about pioneering. Adam.
When you first get there, you find a place to live. Just say it's in a bigger city, you're still scouting at the church, which could be a lot further away from where you live. Do you get just a short-term lease on the house?
Yeah, that all depends on the length of the... Yeah, it would be wise. A six-month lease would be wise if there are options that would be radically different. Right? I can't put it in a formula because every city can be different, right? So you try to use common sense. And these days, fortunately, you can Google, you can find out all information. Most people even have contacts lined up to look for houses. They've got appointments for houses before they ever go because they're able to look and, you know, all that. When I went out, it was an atlas. It had two photos of the whole town. That was all I knew about it, you know. So I didn't have that option. So the idea would be according to the map, somewhere in this area I would like to be. So I would be wise to try to get a house in the middle of my possible options so that it's not, right? If this piece of paper is the whole all where I could possibly be, pretty dumb for me to locate my house down here if there's a chance that I might be up there. Because in big cities, traffic becomes everything. And that's a crucial factor. So, if you think that there are multiple options, then you'd be wise to sign the shortest lease you can, 6 months. Now, if it's not every city fits in that category. So a longer lease may be more advisable.
Would you ever recommend just staying at like one of those extended stay hotel kind of things where you can rent out for a month for an X amount of money?
Usually not, because we have it wouldn't be necessary in an overseas setting. That might be necessary, but we have a limit. We give guys 7 days of hotel. You got to make up your mind. You got to get on this thing. So there's a limit. So you wouldn't if they're staying an extended stay for a month, they're taking out their rental money that we've given to get a place. So we're not going to do both. So you've got to choose.
When you first show up and you don't have a building yet, you know, you're inviting people to your house and that's where you sleep and you have your family there. What if you make a contact that, you know, seems pretty good on the surface, but they're a little sketchy about bringing them around your family and you don't have a building yet to invite them to?
Is his name Chester? Yeah, you know, obviously there would be perhaps limits, you know. I find a guy staggered out of the Granite Creek Bridge. And,
you wouldn't mind him coming to church once or twice, but...
Yeah, coming to a house, that, you know, that may be different. So that's why you got to pray. You got to pray that God gives you common sense as well.
In locating a church, what's your opinion on locating around other churches not of our fellowship? Is it still kind of same?
I wouldn't care. Except for some of our guys have run into locating next to a mega church, a charismatic church, would probably not be wise, simply because in that area, a lot of people you're going to witness to, they're going to go, oh yeah, I see the, you know, First Christian, you know. And that's their focus. So that has some disadvantages. So I probably wouldn't locate right next to a mega church or right close by. You know, and at the end of the day, as you appreciate, it actually doesn't matter because people who are going there often not saved, and B, we're reaching different clientele as well. But just wisdom, if you had an option, you know, I wouldn't choose to be next to them. Be swamped, or guys, they have, some guys have run into the problem where in a in a in a they locate in an office park, you know, multiple buildings or a strip mall, and there are other churches there. And that actually is disadvantageous because someone looking for you sees all the cars and people going in and they assume that's you. And that'll hurt you. So, but that's, you know, that's a rare occurrence.
So in locating the church in a larger city, are you going to deal with the area leader if he is in that city as well? And what area would be open?
Sure, like yeah. You know, now area leaders, we have the most, in, you know, most of the guys that we have that are area leaders, not by their choice, by ours, are guys that have their heads screwed on straight, right? So in other words, if you went somewhere and you were to ask Rich Cox, he would give you good information. That'd be wise. He'll help you out. Now, there are guys who think they're in charge, and those are the guys that I would avoid like the plague, because they'll, you know, those are the ones that are likely to fight with you and claim all the people and say that me and my three people, we've actually claimed all 7 million in the city, and don't touch my 7 million. You know. So in there obviously are limits to this. As I say, we have set in stone a 2 mile limit, and there it's occasionally happened where, Pastor, I'm in this area, this is a great area, and this one guy, he claims that it's his entire outreach area. Well, that's stupid. It's like, well, that's too bad. Correct. You know. So we use common sense, but my point is try to avoid conflict. That would be better. So yes, area leaders help you. Yep.
Pastor, like, well, I'm not married, or some of us aren't, but you know, in the case of choosing a wife, it has to be like, I have to choose wisely, like, you know, for her to adjust to the will of God.
Absolutely.
So that's to be really careful.
Prima donnas don't make good pastors' wives. If they have to have, if she has to live in a certain level and has to have this and got to have that, and she's been treated like a little princess her entire life, you're probably going to have trouble, because pastoring is adjusting. I've lived in places that they sucked, man. But that's okay, because you're there to do a work. So yeah, your choice of wife is very important. So one of the common questions, you would never begin a relationship with a woman without having a conversation, a serious relationship. You know, I don't mean going out to McDonald's afterwards, but a serious relationship without discovering what about preaching? If I felt called to preach, have you ever thought about being a pastor's wife? And if immediately she begins manifesting a foaming at the mouth, that's a bad sign.
So when you're starting off, you've got all this stuff you're thinking about. You're inviting people over to your house doing Bible studies. Would it be wise to pull out old Bible studies that we've done here and use them just kind of to get off the ground a little bit while you're still looking for a job or still looking for a location, but using old Bible studies that you've done in the past?
Well, it depends on the, when you say doing a Bible study, in the Bible studies that you're doing actually are often evangelistic. So you'd be wise to do a Bible study that actually is salvation oriented. Right? That's what I'm talking about. So yeah, I'm in an apartment complex. And so I knock on the doors of all the, and hey, I'm gonna have a Bible study at my house. Doing the Bible study that we're currently doing on the tongue is not the one I'd start with, right? It's because this all I'm doing really is drawing them to tell them about Jesus. So I'd do a simple thing on being born again, having a changed life, you know, and I'd do a number of those, which you probably would be wise to prepare some in advance. Right? Now, as soon as I get converts and they're coming back, I went immediately to the new converts class. That was Bible study. Right? When I finished new converts class, I went to The Church, which is a famous old series by Pastor Mitchell. It just lays out basics of salvation, you know. And then after that, it doesn't matter. Then you can use whatever you want. flexibility is the name of the game. I wouldn't be locked into a series where I'm going to have to. If I had a Bible study, and in one Bible study I had 35 visitors, by golly, I'm whipping out a Salvation Bible study again. Right? You got to be flexible.
David. So, you don't really have a crowd to preach to at that point, right? So you're not preaching sermons, you're just doing Bible studies. So just think it's
Yeah, but it doesn't take long. You can then transition to services. You know, if you're getting converts, have church as well. Converts will they'll hang with anything. Converts aren't picky. Church people are picky.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, so you can, as quick as possible, start having services.
So, say you started, you're getting 15 people coming to your house for Bible study. Would you start off by doing offerings, like the whole nine yards, singing a couple songs, prayer requests? Or would you start off just...
Yeah, well, probably in the initial, no. Obviously, if I'm just starting out, I'd be, you know, in my first Bible study, my first couple of Bible studies, I'd be pretty foolish to be singing choruses they've never even heard of, right? Really, all I'm doing is that I'm getting an excuse to get to know them and preach the gospel. So I'm not hung up on the structure of it. It has to look like this, has to be like that. But as soon as I'm getting people saved and now they're coming back, sure, and then I start putting in little bit of structure, sing a couple songs. And then prayer is something that actually is good. Prayer is something that is actually evangelistic and causes people to want to come back. We're going to pray now for people's problems. You have any problems that you want to pray for? You got any family that's sick? You got any problems in your life? Right? And it's pretty easy when it's three people in your living room, right? We would have a hard time in our church when you start, okay, brother, start over on the end. 2.5 hours later. You couldn't do that. So, you know, but you're flexible. And, you know, offerings is something, when I made it a church service, that's when I started taking offerings, sure. And the difference simply is when you're standing up to preach as opposed to sitting on the couch or on the floor, then that you've changed the dynamic.
I've heard pastors say that you can't, like in the Pioneer setting, can't build a church on people who are on welfare and that kind of deal. And mainly it's just saying is that, you know, because sometimes we can get a lot of response from people who are in ghettos or people who have nothing, but yet there's a difficulty trying to build a church on them. My question is, so then really trying to reach, like you said, different types of class of people, their wages, that kind of thing, like middle class, more like reaching that kind of neighborhood first?
Well...
And then welfare people
the,
come into
the house. The issue becomes where you locate. That's the crucial factor. So, Brandon paid attention to previous lessons, so he said... There's an area that is good, but it's lower class, so I would not locate the building there. He said he's from there looking at right close by. So now you pull in this area. The normal rule of thumb is people are willing to go up, they're not willing to go down. Right? So I could theoretically get someone from South Phoenix to go to Scottsdale. I could not get somebody from Scottsdale to go to South Phoenix. Right? That's just common sense. And that's the way they are. People are very funny about that. They'll have no problem. I'll go up because it's nicer, but I won't go down. And that's just the way it is. Yep?
Are there churches where there's just a great, different kinds of people where you've got, a good mix of, you know, just everybody who needs Jesus? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Rich, poor, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. Absolutely. And that's our aim. Yeah. Our church is a wide mix of people. So, but what we recommend is you don't wind up in a poverty area. So, and I differentiate between, there's a difference between rough people, just drug and crime backgrounds, and welfare people. Those are two different animals. So you got people, these people are, they have no money and they're a mess because they've been in gangs and they're fighting. this person is there. She's a welfare queen who expects everybody to wait on them hand and foot and give them money every time you see them. That's a totally different. I'll take the gangster criminal who I'm checking to see if my stereo is still here over, you know, the people. And the more you work with people, you get to know their spirit.
Yeah.
And the people who, you know, I need you to take me shopping tomorrow. I need you to take me to the doctor. I need, you know. Nah, this person is not going to work well. So, in that area.
You said back that the most successful pastors are button pushers. How do you, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, am I a button pusher or something like that? How do you evaluate yourself to be, I don't know, in a way a button pusher, someone who's not going to be, at a certain point, maybe be satisfied, coast?
Well, a button pusher is one who looks for opportunities and is constantly trying. It's constantly trying. Very simple. Let me ask you a very simple question here. If you were pioneering and you had nobody coming to your church, right? Let's take this afternoon. So, you know, I don't know how much time you'll have before the morning service. But if you had nobody in your church, or you had morning service and no one came, this afternoon, what would you do about that?
Go outreaching.
Okay. And so that is what a button pusher is someone who everywhere I go, I'm looking for opportunities. And so the guy who is going to fail is the one who, no one came this morning and I'm going to go and have a nap and check the scores and read a novel and come back tonight and have more people who didn't show up. And tomorrow we're going to go out and have a nice meal and the next day and it never occurs to them. So a button pusher is someone who's everywhere they're going. They're looking for opportunity. I could have an outreach there, and there's a guy, and I'm going to make a way. There's somebody. You could touch somebody. This afternoon, you could find somebody to witness to. You could find somebody that you could try to bring to church tonight. So you might even be able to do that this morning before church. So you're looking for an eye for opportunity, and that's what God honors. When Lisa and I... Lisa was telling the ladies yesterday at the birthday party and was laughing. Emily was 8 when we went. And so all she'd ever seen is established churches. We had churches of, I think the smallest that she had ever seen was a church of 60, 70 people. And we had up to 140 people or something. So that's all she knew. And then Prescott. And so we go out pioneering and now we're in an empty hall. And she's like, yeah, she's looking at one day she goes, Dad, this is stupid. We had a church. Why'd we leave? Get thee behind me, Emily. She goes from hell. But, especially because it wasn't just pioneering where it is. I had never had ministry. I had a church, right? So I'm thinking, yeah, you know, she's talking, the voice of hell. The devil's assaulting my head. And so it's like, oh, this stinks, you know. And Lisa says, let's go outreach. And so we went up to this area where it's all black and colored. The only music they listen to is R&B and rap. And I went out there with an acoustic guitar, and Lisa and Emily passed out tracks. Lisa witnessed. Emily, I don't know what Emily did. She just kind of passed out tracks. And I'm singing. So, I mean, you know, they're not cool at all. But the people that Lisa was witnessing to, or that we're making contact with, they're all from El Dorado Park, which is a different area. And that's where we should be. So God honors that. That's that we're pushing buttons. I didn't just go home and have a nap. That's what that means. And so it's like, hey, you know what? When we witness, we meet people from El Dorado Park, they're open. Maybe. So God honors that. So, how do you evaluate yourself? Are you pushing buttons? That's the key. Are you looking around constantly with an eye for opportunity and evangelism? Good, Jordan?
Just what would be the best way to keep clarity, you know, and just keep that vision of what it really is to keep that genuine, you know what I'm saying, for God, like the whole reason.
Are you talking about now, or are you talking about when you go out?
Well, just when you go out, yeah.
Yeah, so relationship with God and relationship with your pastor. The guys who stay in touch with me, normally their heads are, they stay screwed on straight. The guys I don't hear from, and they're kind of lost in space, all kinds of things going on in their head, they get weird. So that's a simple, two simple factors. Yep. Very good.